is seriously the greatest movie trailer ever. I haven't watched it in years, but my God, does it bring joy to my life.
I can literally see that.
I love that trailer so much.
What I want to know, and I don't know because I wasn't there, but like the birth of any of your children, was the smile on your face as big as it is right now? I'm going to go with no, probably not.
No, it's too much blood.
Wait, in Legion or?
Legion was the right amount of blood.
So basically what you're doing is blaming Aaron for you not being able to enjoy the birth of your children.
Yeah. Oh, it's coming. Bazooka and Angels. Ho, this is Movies On Up. When the last angel falls, the fight for mankind begins. We are Movies On Up. I am Dave, the elf to my Santa, the presents to my gift wrapping, the Christmas to my Hanukkah. Ryan.
What's up? Maybe I'm like the angel on the top of your tree.
Don't fire a bazooka at that. We are Movies On Up. Our tagline for this week, when the last angel falls, the fight for mankind begins. If you know what movie that's from,
And you
are correct, let us know. MoviesOnUp@gmail.com, Facebook.com/MoviesOnUp, Twitter @MoviesOnUp. You could win, I believe, the last prize package. No, the next to last prize package of 2014.
It'll be full of like a legion of sweet prizes.
Because there's a prize package next week, and that'll be the last one of 2014.
This would be the penultimate prize package.
The penultimate one. So, but it is Christmas. And we had no ideas for Christmas-themed episodes.
Hey, no, back up. This was an idea that I had, and it wasn't because I couldn't think of anything else. I thought this would be cool to do.
It is, and it was. I was getting to that. But instead of doing, like, oh, our favorite Christmas movies, I think we did that last year. This is, like, year two or three of the show. We have no ideas left. This would be our third Christmas episode, so we have zero ideas left. We're going to go through and do our favorite movies.
Our favorite Christmas movies.
Favorite movies that were released on Christmas. This list was interesting to me because I'm a big trend guy. And when you think now, like...
Christmas is a day that movies are released on. It's no big deal.
Yeah, you think of Christmas as that's when movies come out. Doesn't matter the day, doesn't matter anything. You put movies out on Christmas because people are with family and you go. So I thought, oh, this is going to be a tough one because there's no like list of just movies that were released on Christmas. So I did a little research. But in that research, I realized it wasn't always like that.
No.
I started in like the 70s because I didn't know how far back it got. I got to 1992 before a movie even came out on Christmas, which was Hoffa and Trespass.
Oh, I've got some other ones.
But that was on a Friday, so it wasn't that they were released on Christmas.
That might be fair. I didn't count because there in 1987, Good Morning Vietnam came out.
It was released in four theaters.
Right.
I did not count that one because it was only released in four theaters. I'm talking wide Christmas Day.
It's not on my list, but you know,
yeah.
I didn't have wide because there was a movie from last year that we would argue about. It was one of my favorite movies from 2014, was one of your favorite movies from 2013.
Which was
only released in two theaters.
Yeah, but I went wide releases on Christmas Day. A trend I would see up to there was something limited opening wide on Christmas Day. But in 1993, you have Batman Mask of the Phantasm and Grumpy Old Men. So I thought, okay, this is the trend starting. But 93 would have been a Saturday. Then there's nothing until 97 where it was American Werewolf in Paris.
And one of these made my list.
Mr. Magoo, Jackie Brown, The Postman. Sorry to spoil The Postman making your list.
Yep, that was it.
So I thought, oh, okay, 97, that's when it started. We're going to have four or five movies every year. No.
I had one in 98.
Yeah.
Like I had one in 99.
It didn't really, I guess what I'm saying is the trend of a bunch of movies opening up on Christmas isn't really consistent.
I think it's becoming consistent, though. I mean, you can look at... Do you have any movies from last year? Or can we just kind of talk about...
I do.
Son of a bitch. It would have been very easy for me...
Go ahead and talk about it, though, because it's my number one, so by the time we get to it, people will have forgotten this.
And I won't even necessarily mention which one it is, but it would have been very easy for me on a list of five to have three. that came out last year. And I mentioned that there was a movie that came out only in two theaters last year, and that was Lone Survivor. We like that an awful lot. I counted that as a movie from this year because it being in two theaters.
It got wide release in January.
Right, but for at least the purpose of this argument, I thought it was perfectly okay to put on there. But then you have another two movies that in 2,500 theaters was The Wolf of Wall Street. In 2,900 was Walter Mitty. And I love all three of those movies, and I very easily could have had all three of those on there, but I thought, all right, let me just skip 2013. Let me just kind of put that off to the side and then kind of take a look at going back. I didn't find a year going back that there were as many good movies that day. I mean, I think maybe going forward, they could do okay. I mean, Wolf of Wall Street made a pretty good amount of money. I think we had kind of bemoaned the fact that Walter Mitty didn't make as much as it should have because of how phenomenal of a movie it is. And Lone Survivor, I think, got maybe not quite as much credit as it deserved, but it got more, I think, than Walter Mitty did. I think that maybe it's 2013 that's the trend starter.
And maybe, because I have memories back to like early 2000s of going to the movies on Christmas for movies that opened up that early. But it wasn't ever really a consistent trend where I thought, okay, around, you know, at least 99, 2000, we're going to hit where like every Christmas you have like four or five movies. I didn't see that, which I guess was a little surprising to me. You have a lot that get bumped up to like the 19th or something, but it's just interesting to me that it, in my head it's been like, oh, Christmas has always been like a big movie release day. It's not.
Definitely, historically, had not been. But I think that, you know, we've talked specifically about, and it's mostly maybe at the beginning of the year, how there hadn't been, like, March, had not been a fertile ground for
the Hunger Games.
Right, a big blockbuster movie. And that sort of changed. All your blockbusters came out at you know, within a couple weeks of each other in the summer. But I think the movie industry is evolving, and maybe that's why everybody's able to make more money. Because, I mean, if you look at this year, I'm looking at Into the Woods opens up on Christmas, Unbroken opens up on all Christmas on Christmas. I think those are going to be pretty big movies. You've got American Sniper also opening up on Christmas. That's limited release, as well as Big Eyes, Selma. So you have studio movies that are opening up on Christmas. You've got,
and then a Clint Eastwood movie, a Tim Burton movie, and limited release.
Like, yeah. I was going to say, like, it's just sticking with the studio ones. It's literally something from everyone. You've got your family movie. You know, if you've got kids, maybe you don't want them to see Unbroken, but that's still going to be a great for the masses movie. I don't know that I'm going to like these movies as much as I like the movies from last year, but at least you have legit studio movies opening up on Christmas, and the limiteds notwithstanding.
It does make for a, you would think you would want to do, like, if you have a family movie that you don't want buried, or a comedy, like, because stuff has moved. Like, Hot Tub Time Machine 2 was on Christmas until The Interview moved there. So they moved it. Star Wars, The Force Awakens is going to,
sure,
it's not a Christmas release date, I don't believe, but it's in that late December. And I think Lord of the Rings kind of started that. Like, Lord of the Rings kind of started, like, we're going to have, here's this big blockbuster that would fit right in the middle of the summer, but instead we're going to make it a December blockbuster.
Yeah, I mean, really all the Star Wars movies before had been in that May, June area right there, not in December. But there again, you know, you have an entire year full of blockbusters. Why go head-to-head with the Avengers if you don't have to, when, you know, some of these movies have proven that you can make money opening on Christmas?
And that's where, like, I mean, just the way things used to be, all your moneymakers were in the summer. But now you have a slot in March. That, you know, the Hunger Games kind of showed, like, oh, we can get people out. Yeah. So now you're getting big-time blockbusters that were coming out of an overcrowded summer to go into March. Yeah, you still have the summer. Thanks to Twilight, I think, for Thanksgiving week has kind of become.
When did the Harry Potter movies
They were out? Mostly summer.
Okay.
But, like, the Twilights were utilizing Thanksgiving, and that's what Hunger Games is doing
did
now.
This year, yeah.
Yeah, so Thanksgiving, and then that Lord of the Rings spot, which is the 12th to the 19th, like that early to mid-December.
I think it's the week before.
Yeah,
it absolutely is. You've got Annie, The Hobbit, and the new Night at the Museum all coming out that week.
December's packed, but maybe we've overestimated about what exactly Christmas Day means. But I mean, I still got 5 movies in my top 5 and then 4 in my also-ran. So, Ryan, your number 5 movie that released on Christmas.
My number 5 is from 1998. I guess.
I hope this is crossover. I really do.
It might be. I don't know how many movies released on Christmas Day of 1998. I don't know how many Robert Rodriguez movies released on Christmas of 1998.
How many Usher movies released on Christmas of 1998?
Probably the exact same amount of Josh Hartnett movies that released Christmas of 1998. And that, of course, is The Faculty, starring those two gentlemen we just mentioned and Elijah Wood. Jon Stewart. And, I mean, this is a hell of a cast. Clea DuVall was in it.
Jordana Brewster?
Yes, she was. Maybe it's me. But I'm guessing it's not, since it's on your list, too. I think that this is kind of an underrated movie, even within the pantheon of Robert Rodriguez movies. I think it's a bit less fantastical, less over the top than his other horror movies, which is saying a lot when you're considering that this is about body-snatching aliens that try and take over a high school. To say that that's not really as over the top as, you know, maybe From Dusk Till Dawn or Planet Terror, I really, really like the cast in this. You say it's an Usher Raymond movie and you kind of giggle, but he was fine in this movie. I liked the group of them. I kind of think that they're, and I'm sure that this was not lost on the makers of the movie, but I kind of feel like they're a bit like an alien battling Breakfast Club, because you had kind of all those stereotypes of the kids together. And I feel like on some parallel alien dimension or planet that Zeke Tyler is like a horror version of Johnny Bender, because I think that Hartnett was that good in the movie. Snort up, Johnny! How he was dealing drugs in pens I thought was kind of cool. Maybe it's a plot point in the movie that they kind of went at a bit ham-handedly, but, and I also, I guess in 98 I probably would have been freshman in high school, maybe. So a little tip of my 8th, 9th grade cap to Laura Harris in the swimming pool. That was great, too.
Yeah, see, this movie came out like 6 months after I graduated high school. So, I mean, I could totally relate to, you know, being there fighting aliens in my high school, because I just came out of high school. So it's one of those that it hit at the right time. But it's also a competent sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like there were a lot of these kind of movies coming out at that time, like these teen horror-ish type movies. But this one was actually good. The cast was really, really good, like Ryan mentioned.
Salma Hayek, Famke Janssen.
Yeah.
Teachers were not bad at this high school.
No, not at all. It was just a lot of fun. It was a Robert Rodriguez movie. Before Robert Rodriguez movie was really too much of a thing, like before people really had a grasp on what a Robert Rodriguez movie was. So it was just a lot of fun. The death, fighting the aliens was pretty cool. Not to compare the two movies, but you have the element of The Thing where you don't know who to trust because it could be,
sure,
it could be anything. So I just compared The Faculty to The Thing.
I like The Faculty. I think it's a fun movie. And I don't know. I think that maybe guys our age probably got it and they liked it. But I think these damn kids nowadays probably don't know nothing of The Faculty. And they should, because it's really kind of fun.
If those teachers would have just left them damn kids alone, we'd have been all right.
Indeed. Well played, sir. Is that your number 5? Do you want to make
that
it your
number
5?
It was already my number 5.
Nice. Okay.
I hope we just have crossover the whole way through.
God, that would be nuts.
That's not going to happen.
Because I didn't go very far for my number 4. I went exactly 1 year down the road for 1999's Galaxy Quest, directed by Dean Parisot, starring Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman. If the folks in The Faculty were like some sort of alien battling Breakfast Club, then I kind of believe that the Galaxy Quest crew is pretty much like Three Amigos in space. Alan is fine as the captain. That's about the best thing I'll say about him. He's fine. Nothing wrong. Fine performance. But I think that he's completely overshadowed by the rest of the crew, who were all phenomenal. Rickman was great. Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell, and even Sigourney Weaver. Their performances and their characters, I felt like, were far more interesting than Tim Allen's. And I think that the movie could make a lot higher place on my list if the secondary characters had been treated sort of the way Abrams treated the rest of the crew from the Enterprise. Obviously, the two movies are within the same genre, so it's not really a stretch to compare the two. But
Galaxy Quest was actually voted above Into Darkness by Star Trek fans as when it comes to best Star Trek movies.
This is true. Star Trek fans, I voted them as D-bags. I kind of feel like the things that we've praised about the new Star Trek movies, one of the things is every character...
Benedict Cumberbatch?
No. Every character, every crew member of the Enterprise really gets their time to shine, and they have something that's super important to the movie. They're not just there because they have to be. And I think that this movie could have benefited from a little more of that. Not necessarily, you know, that Alan Rickman was underused, but I feel like they went a little heavy with that Tim Allen hammer. And I understand you've got him coming off Home Improvement. I mean, this was a little bit towards the end of that. Tim Allen was hot at the time, so I understand. But I feel like it was sort of, if you have a hammer, every problem is a nail. And they had the Tim Allen hammer, and they really just nailed the shit out of this movie with it.
My number four, it's a movie that I should love a lot more, but I don't, but I still feel like I have to love it. One of my all-time favorite humans in the world, like as close as
Thanks,
I come,
Dave, I appreciate
it. As close as I come to having like an idol or a hero, is Muhammad Ali. So when you give me Will Smith being directed by Michael Mann in a movie about Muhammad Ali's life, yeah, yeah, I'm on board for that. I'm there opening day, Christmas Day. I remember everything about it. I didn't wear a coat because I forgot it because I was so eager to go to the movies. I left without it. I was freezing. But Will Smith was great. But in that same way we talked about, like, Walk the Line being not a great biopic, this was the same. It was just, I knew this story. I knew this about Ali. Like Man on the Moon we talked about. I knew that Andy Kaufman. I didn't see anything about Andy Kaufman I didn't know. I didn't learn anything about Muhammad Ali in this movie.
It seemed like Will Smith decided he wanted to play Muhammad Ali, and they're like, make it happen. I don't care what you do, but he's going to play Muhammad Ali, and everything else was sort of secondary. He's definitely an actor that you would think absolutely has the charisma to pull off the role. Muhammad Ali was one of the most charismatic individuals.
And I think Will Smith was fine.
Yeah.
I think he was really good in this. But maybe my expectations were too high. Maybe I just...
man is called the greatest.
He's
and the
amazing.
Movie that, like, you got was like...
Yeah.
That was something.
Yeah. It's like I'd rather rewatch When We Were Kings for the millionth time in a row. He was such a good character, and there's so much... They did dig into the Joe Louis and him relationship and kind of dug that a little bit more, but not really expanded it. But it didn't cover, like... It was all Ali the character, pretty much, and not Ali the person, which, like, everybody knows
you
Ali
know
the
fights.
Character.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know the fights, and you know the interviews and stuff. I could just watch the footage, because no matter how good Will Smith is, he's not Muhammad Ali. So if I want to see him talking about floating like a butterfly, stinging like a bee, I want to watch that actual clip. But, yeah, so I should have loved this movie a lot more, but I didn't, but I couldn't leave it off, because... This and my number two were the only, I would consider, like, appointment viewings on Christmas. I've been to plenty of movies on Christmas, but the only movies that, like, I anticipated that, like, I'm going opening day, and that it didn't matter that it was on Christmas, I'd have been opening day no matter what it was. So this and my number two came out a lot better than this, but I couldn't just leave this off the list.
My number two is also appointment viewing for me, but my number three is also a movie that I feel like I should like a lot better than I do. It's from 1997. It is a movie that you talked about before. Of those, I can only remember a couple of them, American Werewolf in Paris. And the one I picked, Jackie Brown. Obviously, Quentin Tarantino, Pam Grier, Sam Jackson, Michael Keaton. I feel like this might be a bit of a forgotten gem from Tarantino. It's kind of like The Third Kid. He got out of the box so quickly with Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction being his directorial movies that I think this one is still really good, but in no way, shape, or form is it as good as the other two. And I don't feel like I should hold it against Jackie Brown, but you do. If you're going to sit back and watch a Tarantino movie, why wouldn't you just go grab one of the other? You really have to decide. You know what? No, I'm not going to watch Pulp Fiction for the 78th time. I'm going to throw in Jackie Brown. And I think you should, because it is really, really a great Con movie with some really great characters. And maybe if it was directed by anyone other than Quentin Tarantino, it wouldn't be as underappreciated because it would be somebody else's best movie they ever made.
I love this movie because, like, I'm not a Quentin Tarantino fanboy. I don't dislike him. I don't rave about him.
I'm sure about to sound like I am.
I love this movie not because it's a Tarantino movie. I'm a sucker for Elmore Leonard. I mean, I've made that pretty clear in the past. I love Elmore Leonard. This is an Elmore Leonard adaptation. You got Michael Keaton playing Ray Nicolette, same character he played in Out of Sight. Pam Grier, Robert Forrester. Like, the cast in this is awesome. It's a low-key Tarantino movie. It's not as loud and boisterous as most Tarantino movies are. It's like a Tarantino movie taking a nap, pretty much, because it's not that...
There's still a lot going on.
There's still a lot going on, but it just... To me, I guess I like it because it feels more like an Elmore Leonard movie than it does a Quentin Tarantino movie. The two just mixed very well.
I think it's incredible that you have Pam Grier pretty much headlining a blaxploitation movie 25 years after she was making Coffee. I mean, that Tarantino likes to do, this is my version of a women's revenge, this is my version of a whatever. And this was his version of a blaxploitation movie, which I think he did really, really wonderfully. And again, I would give a tip of the middle school cap to Bridget Fonda in Jackie Brown. She was lovely.
My number three, a little known fact about me is that I enjoy Australia as a country and things that come from Australia.
Have you mentioned that before?
I don't know. But if you haven't picked up on it, I enjoy Australia. And in 2005, we got a movie from Greg McLean called Wolf Creek. I didn't like Wolf Creek when I first saw it. This one, it popped up to me late going through this because Wolf Creek 2 just came out this year. And I went back and I rewatched Wolf Creek. And I think I expected something else when I first saw it because I wasn't that into it. But then I watch it now, and I don't know if it's just because I've matured in the last 9 years because I don't think that's it. Generally, that's not the answer for anything.
Is that you've matured.
That I've matured. Or maybe I went in with no expectations. Maybe I had high expectations the first time, and then I went in with no expectations. But it's a really well-crafted horror movie. It's a slow burn. It's not a scare fest. It's not a slash-slash-boob-boob movie. It's more of a...
Which has been derived from the kick-kick-punch-punch movie. I see where you're going with that.
I mean, it's a really, really good movie, and it's an atmospheric. I mean, it takes place in the outback, where not the steakhouse, the country. That would be a terrible horror movie. Just everybody trapped in an outback.
Oh, but what if angels were attacking them?
I would be into it because they have bazookas in outback. I'd assume.
Of course, they have them under the bar. That's not a gun. This is a gun.
But I enjoy Wolf Creek. And I like that this was one of the first, or not one of the first, but I remember they promoted it heavily because I think a few years before it, or no, it might have been after, Black Christmas released on Christmas 1 year. But this was like, hey, we're putting a horror movie out on Christmas. And I know they promoted it like that. Like, hey, horror movie, Christmas, go for it.
Right, so. It's counter-programming at its finest.
And I think that's why I went in with higher expectations. But I it's a good movie. Watch Wolf Creek 2. Wolf Harder.
My number two is the first movie I ever went to see on Christmas. So it was, in fact, the first appointment viewing that I ever had. And it was just from 2012. Another Quentin Tarantino flick, Django Unchained, starring Jamie Foxx, Christoph Waltz, and Leo. I guess the thought of going to see a movie on Christmas seemed a bit taboo to me. My family lives around here, so I kind of feel like, well, I should be doing family things for Christmas. And God help you, you know, if you have, you know, a somewhat large family or you have to go multiple places during Christmas, that kind of takes up most of your time. And kind of the jobs I had had growing up, I was working the day before and the day after. Like Christmas, I was off. And I could go, but family stuff kind of dictated that I didn't. So I guess in 2012, I was like, you know, I love you, Mom, Dad, Grandpa, but you guys are just going to have to take a back seat to Django. And I thought this was absolutely great. I was a little bit nervous, especially seeing some of the trailers and Leo's performance. I thought that he might be a bit much for me, and with a director like Tarantino, you could see where he might not really reel him back because he's a bit of an odd bird himself. But I thought DiCaprio was tremendous in this movie. So great. Such a great villain. And I like Christoph Waltz a lot in this. I was surprised that he won the Oscar for this.
He was good, but it wasn't Oscar worthy to me.
I didn't think so. But apparently that's really all it takes is you put him with QT and you get a supporting actor win. That, I mean, they're two for two. I liked the movie. I thought the third act was really, really good. It's a longer movie than I typically like, but the third act had such a payoff from not just the Samuel L. Jackson, like the comedic side of that, but there's, again, there's a lot of action to it. So I'm laughing my ass off as guys are getting their asses shot off. And it was just a great, interesting climax to the movie. And I still think it's the best part of that ill-fated Seth MacFarlane Western from earlier on this year.
My number two was another appointment viewing. I talk about how much I love Muhammad Ali. Another thing that's dear to my heart that I absolutely adore and love is Peter Pan. So in 2003, when they released a live-action Peter Pan, sign me up. I was on board. I wanted to be there. I was there. And you know what? This movie, I feel like, kind of went, nobody cared, and I don't think it's really had a place in history. Like, I don't really think anybody goes back to it now, but it's a damn fine Peter Pan adaptation. Like, to take this live action, Jason Isaacs was fantastic as Captain Hook. It was a more grounded Captain Hook than we're used to seeing. Jeremy Sumpter, who, you know, his career hasn't done anything since, but he was a good Peter Pan. Rachel Hurd Wood as Wendy, really good. And it's not just Sumpter and Hurd Wood. Their careers didn't really lift off after this. And then you have Olivia Williams, Lynn Redgrave. My favorite performance, though, I've always had a big, big crush on Tinkerbell. So when you give me Ludovine Sagnier, who I had seen earlier that year in Swimming Pool, oh, yeah, yeah, give me Peter Pan. Bring me Peter Pan. It's a great fantasy movie because I guess I never really looked at Peter Pan as really a kid's story because it's, to me, I look at it a little darker than that because it's basically just about kids wanting to run away and not go home again.
It's Arrested Development.
I mean, I love the story of Peter Pan. I can't imagine a better live action adaptation of this because it does take you to Neverland. You have this magical world. You have this fantastical place. Tinkerbell's performance was great. Jeremy Sumpter was really good. It was really well made by PJ Hogan. Just something about it, it hit me and I really, really liked it. And it seemed to kind of disappear. I don't really think it holds a place in anybody's history but mine for some reason. But I mean, we do have a couple live action Peter Pan like reimaginings coming out. And I just, one of them, Hugh Jackman's playing Blackbeard or whatever, but I just don't think any of them are going to hold a candle to this Peter Pan because I think it's actually a really great movie.
My number one is a movie that would be number one on your list far and away, but I don't think you counted it because it was only a limited release back in 2006. It happens to be one of your favorite movies of all time. It is Alfonso Cuarón's Children of Men. And as soon as I said it, you were like, yep, I have a justification for this.
Yeah.
You don't need. Am I right? That's why you left it off?
It was limited release.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
It's a top three movie ever for me.
But, right, yeah. And I figured, I honestly thought we were just going to have co-number ones. I was like, fine, screw it. I know what Dave's number one's going to be. But then when we started and you said that limiteds didn't count and we had gone so long and hadn't had your 2013 movie, I thought, oh, shit, we don't have co-number ones. But I imagine that you'll have some things to add here. It's been number one on several lists before. If I had to guess, I would say if we continue to do the show, it might be number one on a list in the future. Like, I don't know, maybe movies that take place in the year 2027 would probably be. I mean, I can't think of a better one off the top of my head. Maybe I, like most Americans, was somewhat late to the Clive Owen party, but I was pretty high on him early in the 2000s, and I think that he actually had enough action cachet that I thought at the time, and maybe I still think, that he would make an excellent Bond. Perhaps the co-star of my number two would make an excellent Bond villain opposite Clive Owen, but that's maybe a digression for another day. Obviously, this is a post-apocalyptic movie, and I kind of like that genre, and it's so varied. You have your pretty standard nuclear war has ruined the human race, and then you have things that I find, not that I don't find nuclear holocaust plausible, because I get it. That's why there are so many of them. But I like sort of the simpler aspect of, well, you know, for whatever reason, women are infertile. They can't keep having babies. So it's something just like that. That's really all it would take. And essentially, you are looking at the extinction of humans. They become an endangered species because they just, that's it. That's the end. Literally, you're looking at an 18-year-old kid as a baby, and he is the end of the line.
And you're celebrating the youngest person alive who is celebrated as a celebrity, but then also hated by people for being the last of something. This movie is flawless to me. I think this movie is absolutely perfect. Alfonso Cuarón, amazing. Like, it's so perfectly directed. The reveal. And it's one of those that you need to go in blind. Like, when I went in to see it, I didn't know what it was about. I had no idea. So the reveal, the first reveal is pretty great. Of course, the tracking shot, the five-minute scene that covers a lot of ground with the blood on a camera. Clive Owen's performance, Chiwetel Ejiofor is pretty great. And Julianne Moore. I mean, it's just everything about it. And then the highlight of it, Michael Caine. Michael Caine's had an amazing career, but Michael Caine will never top what he did in Children of Men to me. I mean, every time he's on screen, it's the greatest moment of my life. I mean, him in that movie, whether it's Happy or he's ripping my guts out, like, it's, he's so good in that movie, and it's in such limited screen time, but he makes such an impact in that movie.
Welcome to the collective conscious, Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah.
Kind of early for him, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, this was after Undeclared, and I hate that I recognized him on the bike. Like, oh, hey, that's the British kid from Undeclared. But it's so good, and I know I've talked about Children of Men before, but it's such a fascinating, because it's weird, because I think about, like, what kind of list would this be number one on, and I think we've done post-apocalyptic before, but I don't, it's hard to consider, it's hard to consider it a post-apocalyptic, because the apocalypse didn't really happen. It's just we're slowly weaning we're slowly being weaned out.
That's the thing. I mean, there was no one apocalyptic event like, you know, a giant tidal wave
or
whatever. But you are, the apocalypse is, you know, the extinction of our species.
It's
I
guess best movies about impending doom, I guess this would be it. Because it's such a weird, unique, like, premise, and it was a fantastic book.
Maybe that was it. It was about movies about the end of the world. I think
maybe
we did that one.
But it was, I mean, I could go on. I could do a whole episode on this. You thought I was excited when we talked about Die Hard last week. But, I absolutely love Children of Men, and it's right there. Like, it's no exaggeration, my second or third favorite movie ever. It's just so brilliant.
And I was the one that had to cheat to get it on the list.
Yeah, I almost did, but I was going to not, because I knew I would gush about it. It's like, let's keep this episode short. Let people get to their presents. It's a present.
Maybe they're waiting in line to see Into the Woods. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a present for me every time I watch this movie. Yeah. But yeah, I absolutely love Children of Men.
But what do you love more than that?
Nothing, except maybe 28 Days Later and Sunshine. But my number one was a wide release just last Christmas. A movie I was
Did you give it your heart?
No.
No.
I was late to the party. I saw this around DVD release. I don't remember when I saw it. Maybe it was January. It is Secret Life of Walter Mitty with Ben Stiller. I know we've talked about it before on a couple lists, but again, much like Peter Pan, I feel like this movie just kind of went under the radar. Like, for being a Ben Stiller movie with Patton Oswalt and Sean Penn in it. Like, I just feel like people saw the previews. They're like, okay. Some people saw it and then just moved on, which is a shame because it's a gorgeous movie. Like, it looks great. Like, I have a newfound respect for Stiller as a director after this. Like, I like some of his previous directorial work, but it wasn't like this. this didn't come off like an actor directing. Like, this came off, it was a very visual movie. It was very visually stunning and very visually appealing. It's a very, you know, stylized movie. And he's, you know, I'm not a big Ben Stiller fan on screen, because I feel like he's kind of not really a one-trick pony, but he dials it up to 11 for pretty much everything he did. This one, he dialed it down to like a 5 or a 6, like very low-key Ben Stiller that I thought was great. And, you know, I cared about Walter Mitty, and the dialogues with him and Patton Oswalt were the highlights of the movie to me. And like, what have you done since we last saw? I punched a shark. Like, he goes on this big, and it was cool, because I've always liked the story of Secret Life of Walter Mitty. I enjoy the story, and this was a different take on it. This really modernized it, and kind of took it somewhere different. It worked. It's like one of the feel goodiest of feel good movies, because it's hard to just not enjoy yourself during it, and it's hard not to just smile when the credits come up, because it's such a beautiful, like, heartwarming piece, and I absolutely love it. And I hate to use terms like that because it sounds so weird, but I don't know how else to explain The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
The adventure in it sort of reminded me a little bit of Big Fish. The feelings I get watching that, while they're not the exact same, it's still kind of that unassuming hero that you wouldn't believe it when he's calling Patton Oswalt, telling him what he did. Like, you would just kind of laugh it off and be like, yeah, whatever. Especially coming from this character who notoriously doesn't kind of get out of his shell. But yeah, I was shocked at how much I liked this movie after I saw it. And again, I think I fit into the same category that you do. I'm not a particularly large fan of Ben Stiller on screen. The movies that he directs often are pretty good, because I can kind of see that sense of humor. And this one did have humor in it.
It wasn't Tropic Thunder.
Right, no.
The jokes weren't forced, which he does a lot.
Yeah, and it was sort of an understated humor, I guess, but with overly stated, you know, action, if that's even possible, if that makes any kind of sense at all. But yeah, I like this movie a lot, and I would have had a tough time, to be honest with you, picking between Walter Mitty, Wolf of Wall Street, and Lone Survivor. Any one of those movies probably would have been my number one. And I didn't want to pull what I will call a Dave and say I have, you know, try number ones. That would have been a shady maneuver. So I just decided I would leave them all off.
I did that once.
I feel like you've done it more than once.
I may have.
Yeah, I think you've probably done it at least three times.
Try times,
exactly. Those are our favorite Christmas movies or whatever.
Movies released on Christmas.
Yeah, that's true. I call them Christmas movies just because I think it's funny. Because everybody does, here's your five favorite Christmas movies, It's a Wonderful Life.
Gremlins, Die Hard.
Yeah, exactly. And we did that. We did the hipster Christmas movies last year.
They're not hipster Christmas movies.
I mean, I kind of feel like...
Lethal Weapon.
I kind of feel like hipsters would say, yeah, my favorite Christmas movie is Lethal Weapon.
I've said Gremlins and Die Hard are my favorite Christmas movies my whole life, and I'm not a hipster.
All right, you've been hipster your whole life, Dave. I don't know what to tell you.
Any also rans?
Really not. I mean, Good Morning Vietnam didn't make the list. I really like that movie. And having to leave off all three from 2013, I very easily could have had, you know, Galaxy Quest as an also ran. But I guess that would be about it. I've talked about all my also rans.
The Talented Mr. Ripley and Stepmom. I love Susan Sarandon.
I like one of those.
One of them died at the end.
Susan Sarandon.
Yes. Yeah, that's our Christmas movie episode. Thank you for giving us the gift of people listening to us talk about movies.
For another year. Another calendar year.
Yeah, another calendar year. That would be our second full calendar year, I think.
Probably.
So thank you, everybody that's been involved by either listening at all, especially if you've reached out to us. Jason West has emailed every episode this year. He is
the tagline.
He has emailed the tagline. So I just... I just want to see how long that keeps going, because I enjoy it. We record these so far ahead of time. I have no idea when episodes go up, so it brings a smile to my face when I get an email from Westy that just says Legion and then something. He always puts
which
something
else in
there.
Which you'll get next week.
Yeah, or tomorrow. But just reach out to us anyway, Twitter, Facebook. We enjoy it. It makes it worth it. Because sometimes it feels like it's just me and Ryan talking to each other for a while. I'm wearing these uncomfortable headphones. But thank you very much for listening. Listen to my other show, Dave and Mike Have Daddy Issues. You can find that at daddyissues.net. I've been meaning to plug it all month, and I forgot until just now. We also have Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. We had our Thanksgiving episode last month, probably a Christmas episode this week. So thank you very much. Have a very happy holiday, whatever holiday it is that you want to have. Just have a happy one. And we will see you next year with our next week. We're still next week. Next year is after next week.
Yeah.
But we'll see you next week with our second annual Uppies. Last year was a lot of fun, so I can't wait to do this year's because I think it's going to be a lot of fun again.
And then in January, one of the episodes that we anticipate the most is like our What Did You Do Over Christmas Break episode, where typically we see a shit ton of movies.
We catch up on a lot of movies for the year.
Yeah, so there's definitely some ones that we've probably not talked about this year that we will be getting to very, very quickly.
And then
so.
Maybe the week of January 22nd, we'll do a four-year anniversary episode of when Legion released in theaters. So you have that to look forward to next
yeah,
year.
Yeah, that's fine. That just means maybe. One less show in January. I have to plan. So
but until next week, happy Christmas. Enjoy your holiday.
Yeah, whatever.
Ho, ho, ho. And
keep it up.